This is Creating Windows, Not Bars, a monthly show on Justice Radio on WMPG with your hosts Mackenzie Kelly and Linda Small. Today we're talking with Val Cabala, the managing editor of Solitary Watch, about the use of solitary confinement in the United States and its repercussions.
But first, a little information about us. I'm Mackenzie Kelly, a recovery coach and peer mentor coordinator of Healthy Acadia and the program director of Reentry Sisters.
And I'm Linda Small, a project coordinator with Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition and executive director of Reentry Sisters, an organization with a trauma-informed and gender-responsive approach to reentry.
For the past 2 years, we have worked together to provide support and community for justice-impacted women as they reunify with their families, look for work and housing, and complete their educational aspirations. Our show explores safety and community and asks what it's like for people to come home after serving time in prison. Today, we're talking about bringing public awareness to the widespread use of solitary confinement in the United States. What is solitary confinement, and what are the impacts on individuals, families, and our communities? We're going to begin with an introduction. Valerie, if you could please tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you to the work for solitarywatch.org.
Absolutely. Yes. And thank you so much for having me on this show. I'm grateful to be here. So yeah, I'm Val Cabala, and I'm currently working at Solitary Watch. I began getting involved in the movement back in 2011. It's sort of an ambiguous, not necessarily easy to like pin down exactly when, but a pivotal moment was in 2011 when the state of Georgia executed and murdered Troy Davis, who was a Black man accused of and convicted of killing a cop. And the whole world could see that he was innocent, and they still executed him. And so that was a moment for me where I was like, what's going on in this country? And I need to do something about it. And so I was in college at the time, and we started a group on campus, Justice Not Jails. From there, then I found Solitary Watch, and I started out as an intern. And my first responsibility at Solitary Watch was to read all the letters that we got from people in solitary across the country. It just blew my mind. Like, I just didn't know, because I had never been in prison myself. Obviously, I had never been in solitary confinement. So I like heard that term, but I didn't understand really what that meant. And I didn't understand what people were going through. That's what a lot of our work is actually based on, is letters from people around the country in solitary. Now it's shifting more. Some people have access to tablets. So a lot of our work is on these telecommunication email systems that are all very glitchy. But yeah, our purpose and our work really is to amplify the voices of people who are in solitary confinement, to spread public consciousness about what's going on in those deep, dark holes behind bars in the prison, within the prison.
Yeah, that's a great opening, Val. Thank you so much. And I can understand why that would be a pivotal moment for you. I mean, so many people were shocked. However, it takes a unique individual to go from that to actual action, right? Which is a lot of times what we're missing in our communities. But for our listeners, you know, they might not even understand what solitary confinement is or how our current system uses it. So can you describe what solitary confinement is?
Yeah, of course. So solitary confinement is the practice within prisons of isolating an individual for a certain reason. There are a lot of different reasons, but usually it's typically isolating an individual for 23 hours a day. So they're stuck in a concrete box the size of a parking slot or a bathroom. And literally, it's your room is also your bathroom. Sometimes you could get sentenced for 30 days, 60 days. Sometimes it's indefinite. I know people who have been in solitary confinement for 44 years. They give different reasons for why people are isolated. So it could be that there was a conflict. Someone got into a conflict with another incarcerated person or with a correctional officer, and they throw you in isolation. It could be that you're a child and they don't have any room in the juvenile facility to put you, or your case is so serious that they chose to put you in an adult facility, but they can't put you with adults because it's quote unquote not safe. And so they say it's safer to put you in isolation. And at the end of the day, according to the United Nations and according to people who have experienced solitary confinement, it's torture. And common sense even tells you that, because you're being isolated, not only isolated from interaction and communication with other human beings, but you're in a concrete box where you don't have sunlight, you don't have room to move around, you don't have any access to anything stimulating your mind or any sensory stimulation, really. Yeah, that's the practice of solitary confinement, and it looks different in different prisons. It goes by different names. We were just talking before we came out here about how prisons will often say that they don't have any solitary confinement, but it looks exactly like solitary confinement. They just call it a rehabilitation unit or segregation unit, or they have any number of names. But at the end of the day, it's rooted, solitary confinement is a practice that's rooted in a philosophy of punishment instead of addressing the actual root cause of why something happened.
Yeah, thank you for that, Val. I think that the practice is just so over the top, right? And really, we're creating so much trauma among people who are actually in solitary for, maybe the shortest amount to years, And I know you had said that previously when you kind of got into this work that you started reading letters from solitary confinement, right? Could you maybe tell us a little bit about like what that felt like, or if there was anything specific that kind of tugged on your heartstrings, or what actually made you follow through and continue this work?
Definitely. Yeah, I was just thinking back to how it felt to read them, and it was shocking to me, because reading those letters made me realize that there's a whole world existing in this country that, if you don't seek it out, or if you don't know someone who's in there, or if you haven't been in there yourself, you could live your whole life and not know that people are being tortured. And we put out a report recently, based on statistics from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, that estimated it's about 122,000 people in this country who are in solitary confinement. So it's a lot of people who are experiencing this torture. And so it blew my mind. I was like, how did I not really know about this? And it's just so many letters that are coming to mind. But one thing that I was just thinking about, some of the letters that I'm visualizing, it's like people lose their minds. And so some people will write us like gibberish, and some of it makes sense, and then some of it is just like a drawing, and then it's like scribble around a page, but it's like I understand what they're saying. And sometimes, and I can just tell that it's like this person is going in circles in their mind because they can't do anything else, really. Those letters definitely hit me. And then letters of people describing what they wanted to do to themselves, people who wanted to self-harm or take their own lives. Those were definitely hard to read, because I'm in a position where I can't necessarily do anything besides write them back. And sometimes that can make a difference. If someone, actually gets a letter back instead of just writing a million people and not hearing from anyone. But at the end of the day, like, we, at Solitary Watch, don't have the ability, or just me as an individual doesn't have the ability to get them the mental health treatment that they really want and need, or change their circumstances so that they can have a regular human interaction instead of their only interaction with a human being getting cuffed up in a food slot. And then what also hit me was the brilliance of writers in solitary confinement. Like the way that they would express, sometimes they wouldn't even be submitting a piece for publication. They were just expressing themselves. And I was like, oh my God, this person's like a genius writer. And then, we would ask to publish their work a lot of times, but it's so much talent, so much value, so much beauty in the people that were just that the system is just trying to throw away. And that's how I kind of see solitary confinement, prison in general, but especially solitary confinement. It's just like you have no value, so we're going to stick you in a corner and not let you talk to anybody, not let anyone talk to you, not give you any resources, not pour into you in any way, just take everything from you, and hope that you disappear. And so, our work tries to flip that.
You are listening to Creating Windows, Not Bars, Justice Radio with your hosts Mackenzie Kelly and Linda Small. Today we're talking with Valerie Kabbalah of Solitary Watch about how our U.S. system of punishment consistently uses solitary confinement and shining a light on its damaging effects on mental health and the families and loved ones of incarcerated persons.
Thank you, Val. That is just extraordinary. And I can't imagine, reading things like that and feeling almost helpless, right? Like, I really want to reach out and do something for you. But what strikes me is the UN identifying it as torture because it's dehumanizing, right? It's stripping you of your humanity, and it is done intentionally. And it is also intentional by corrections to obfuscate that, right? To not let people in the community know that that's what they're doing and that's what their intention is, which is also part of that philosophy of punishment you talked about and part of the dehumanization, because it is completely isolating, right? For those poor folks in solitary. And I wonder if you might speak for a minute. Did you ever engage in with women who were pregnant or mothers who were in solitary confinement? Because there's sort of is there a unique type of destruction, right, of motherhood within solitary confinement practices?
Yes, there is, and that's not talked about enough. There's a woman that I really look up to, who is actually just got out of solitary last week. She's in Texas, and she's really focused on getting the voices of women and the experiences of women in solitary out and into the conversation. Her name is Quanetta Harris, and she's a really prolific writer and also a recipient of our Ridgeway Reporting Project Award. But she talks about being a mother in solitary, and that was really devastating to read. She basically was saying, it was in a piece that she wrote for Lux magazine, and she was saying that out of all the impact, out of all the effects that solitary confinement had on her, which are so dire in themselves, like in her physical body and psychologically, the worst was not being able to talk to her kids. And she was in a situation where she couldn't have the phone for extended periods of time. So at one point, the only way that she could have a conversation was in a guard's office with the guard right there. And if her family member or her were to say something that the guard didn't like, they would just hang up. And so they were always like trying to fit in, talking real fast, trying to fit in all the updates. And then I think it was one time, like her family member asked her kid asked her if she could send her money, and the guard hung up because he was like, "No, you can't talk about money." And it's just so cruel. And I just can't imagine being a mother and not having that ability, that access to know if your kids are okay. You just don't know. Like, you're existing in this reality where something could have happened and you don't know, and you don't have any way to find out. That's like terrorizing. And yeah, with pregnant women in solitary, there have been, like, I've read some pieces about it, and I know an advocate who came home and she experienced solitary confinement when she was pregnant as well. That to me is really hard to comprehend that we do that. To think about, because for me as a woman, like, pregnancy is already, a life-changing experience and a stressful experience, and can be, a dangerous experience sometimes. Like, and for the system to be shackling women while they're pregnant, while they're in labor, and the woman I read about, her name was Pamela Nguyen, and she told her story about how she actually ended up miscarrying because they would force her to be cuffed behind her back whenever they would move her, which is typical in solitary confinement. Whenever you leave your cell, you have to be cuffed off, and you have to be strip searched every time you leave your cell, even for visits, even for legal visits. And so they were enforcing that on her. She was forced to be cuffed behind her back, and one time she fell. And ever after that, she, miscarried. And yeah, it's incomprehensible to me that this goes on.
What, if you could tell us a little bit about the purpose of Solitary Watch and what exactly your role is within the organization?
Yes, of course. So our purpose, so Solitary Watch started about 15 years ago, and I joined in 2017, 2016, 2017. But when they first formed back then, people didn't really even understand what solitary confinement was at all. In general, a lot of people, would just think about, like, Hannibal Lecter, just like, like real extreme, worst of the worst cases, and sort of like a caricature of what it really is. And so Solitary Watch's purpose, when it formed, was to build public consciousness around what is actually going on in solitary confinement, and for people to understand the impact of it. So now we're in a time where people do, in general, have an idea of, they've at least heard the term solitary confinement. They've likely heard the term solitary confinement in relation to torture. And there are several states, I think 24, 25 states at least, who have advocacy campaigns to end solitary confinement, or have bills in the legislature in their state pushing to end solitary confinement. And so it's a different, the consciousness has shifted, in a good way, in my opinion. And now we're focused on, in regards to like shifting the narrative, we're focused on helping people to understand and putting out, research and articles and information about public safety and how solitary confinement impacts public safety, because there's a misconception that a lot of especially prison administrators put out there that solitary confinement is necessary for safety and security. When in reality, if you look at the numbers and you look at examples and you look at other countries, it's the opposite. Because when you inflict violence on people and when you torture people, I think you were saying this earlier, Linda, that it actually makes it worse. And individuals internalize that. And on top of that, a lot of times people are put into solitary confinement based on behaviors from mental illness. And so sometimes they'll just get psychotropic medicated out. And at the end of the day, the root of what caused the situation to happen or what caused them to be thrown in solitary confinement is never addressed. And it really only gets worse. And we see that violence increases with the increased use of solitary confinement. So yeah, that's basically like where we're at right now in regards to shifting the narrative. But main goal of our work is amplifying the voices of people who are in the hole, who are in solitary confinement. Because, as we were talking about earlier, it's so many people who are incredibly talented writers who are trapped in there, and there are so many barriers from their work to getting out, because you have to know the telecommunication systems, and a lot of outlets out here aren't necessarily looking for writers inside. They're not going on to Securus or Getting Out or Connect Network. So we act as a go-between when we're working with a writer. We'll reach out to the publication, and we'll work with them on editing their piece and stuff like that, so that incarcerated writers can get into the media, because they're the ones really who can break the silence on what's going on in solitary confinement. So yeah, that's really our main purpose.
You know, the talent and the creativity and brilliance of these people who we are torturing every single day. And somehow they manage to reach in the depths within themselves, to keep it together, to reach out into community members who are willing to listen to them and willing to help them, and willing to see them as fully human. And that's an extraordinary thing to do. And we're deeply grateful for your work. And I wonder if you might help our listeners understand a little bit. So, what would they find on your website if they go to solitary watch.org? And also, what can they do to support Solitary Watch's work to create awareness and to end the use of solitary confinement in our US prisons?
Yeah, so our website is solitarywatch.org, and you can find us on social medias at Solitary Watch. And what you'll find on those platforms is mostly the writings of people in solitary confinement through our Voices from Solitary series and our Ridgeway Reporting Project. So Voices from Solitary is essays, firsthand accounts from people in solitary. Our Ridgeway Reporting Project is reported journalism from people in solitary confinement. A lot of those are especially are co-published with other publications, whether it's in that state or focusing on a specific issue. And then we also have fact sheets and reports breaking down, different aspects of solitary confinement, racism in solitary confinement, the psychological effects, the neurological effects, children in solitary confinement. So you can find a lot of information about different aspects of solitary. Right now, we're working on putting out a report about alternatives to solitary confinement. Probably by next year, that'll be out. It'll be a series of pieces because we're looking at all the different reasons that people get thrown into solitary and what we could do differently instead of torturing people.
So, could you maybe offer some guidance for listeners about how they can create awareness, and, right, and help end the use of solitary confinement? Because every state does it, right? And every state has prisons, and every state does solitary confinement in one form or another.
Yes, definitely. So, so another program that we have is called Lifelines to Solitary Confinement. It's a pen pal program. So you can find that information on our website and sign up to directly communicate with someone in solitary confinement, which in itself can make a huge difference. And then I promise you, you will learn a lot. And also, there are advocacy groups and organizations around the country who are fighting in the legislature or and just in the public to end solitary confinement. And so in your state, if you find the organization, you can go to Unlock the Box. I think it's unlocktheboxcampaign.org. And that's the national coalition that houses all the different local state campaigns. And so you can see there if your state you can get in contact with people in your state who are working to end solitary confinement. So that's what I would suggest.
That's excellent advice. Thank you so much, Val, for sharing the incredible work of solitarywatch.org with us and our listeners, and how we can still have safety in our prisons, right, without dehumanizing of solitary confinement practices.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was an amazing conversation. I really appreciate it.
No, we're so glad that you're here. We're the lucky ones, girl.
We'll be posting something. I think we ought to post on our Facebook page about your pen pal program. I think that's really
Yeah.
cool. So, in coming shows, we're going to explore the ideas of public safety, the unique stigma justice impacted women face, and the experiences and struggles of returning citizens to create meaningful and productive lives.
Visit
Thank
the
you so much.
Justice Radio Show page on WMPG.org for archived episodes aired on WMPG, WERU, and WMHB. A big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series.